Good morning. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. My name is Christina Clock, and I'm a member here at Prairie UU. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, or family structure. We welcome you no matter what your age or your abilities or your inabilities. Later in the service, we will invite visitors, guests, and returning friends to introduce yourselves so that we might get to know you better. On Sunday mornings, we provide a variety of services. They are presented either by a Prairie member, a member of the wider community, or by our minister, who we are currently recruiting for a minister, so don't have one right now. Today, Saida Jamshidi will be presenting a service on Rumi. Very much look forward to that. Our chalice lighting this morning will be done by Rebecca, Raju, and their children.
Come, come, whoever you are, wanderer, worshiper, lover of living, it doesn't matter. Ours is not a caravan of despair. Come, even if we have broken your vow 1,000 times, come, yet again, come, come. These are the words of Rumi.
I now have the honor to introduce our speaker for today. Saida Jamshidi is a foreign correspondent with a focus on the Middle East region. Saida has worked in different news organizations in Iran and the United States. Currently, she works for Free Speech Radio News and covers the Middle East media for European Journalism Center. She is also a follower of Rumi's path as a novice Sufi. Please join me in welcoming Saida.
Thank you so much, Derek. Okay, it was an excellent introduction. Thank you so much, Penny. I really enjoyed it. And thank you so much for having me here. So I really thought hard about how to start and how to introduce this great man, that has touched the heart of so many people, including so many poets in the United States and all around the world. One of them to just briefly introduce is Edward Nicholson, who spent about 40 years of his life to translate Masnavi in English. And also I was just interviewing Lale Bakhtiar, the book that you read. Lale is the publisher of nonprofit publishing house in Chicago, and a friend of Demi's. So she was telling me that it was this amazing person who retired about many years ago, and then he decided to spend 15 years of his life to translate Rumi in 5 languages. And Rumi has touched so many hearts and minds, and I thought, so in order to just put things into context and give you why it's important, at least for me in my life, to just give you a very quick example and a story about my own life. So basically, I was 17 years old, and no wonder, I absolutely hated Islam. I hated anything related to Islam. I hated Prophet Muhammad, I hated Quran, I hated Islam, I hated anything related to the Islamic teachings whatsoever. And to understand that, it's because to put into the context of the kind of feeling that I had. I was a child when the revolution broke, 1979. I still remember those big guys with open mouths screaming and shouting in the main square and saying nonsense. To me was, why all of these people? And I was just so little kid, just shouting, so angry. And then it was war between Iran and Iraq. Again, I was about 9 8, 9 years old. And the society that I grew up was extremely intense, very dense. And the government, to me, was actually they were doing it. They were imposing all of those, their interpretation of what Islam is and what Islam should be on women, on people, on people in general, especially on women. And I was absolutely so, so angry about that. So in return, and in my own sense of rebel against all of these things, I decided to absolutely hate Islam. So I was about, again, 17 years old when my dad came over and told me that, you know what, whatever they do, this is their interpretation about Islam. It's not religion. I mean, the religion itself is so beautiful, and the religion itself is so something, so many things to offer. You should not mix their interpretation of Islam with what they, you know, trying to say and do. And I said, no, Khomeini tells me to wear hijab, and this guy tells me to go to a street like this, and that guy, and you guys trying to control my life, so I'm not going to listen to you. But thankfully enough, I was a very avid reader. I read anything. I read history, literature, German literature, French history, whatever. I mean, and my dad had about a library of more than 4,000 books. You could only imagine that how many books I had. And he was in a publishing business, and I grew up with this, you know, with this picture and image in my mind always, that my dad came over on the weekends with a box of books, and books were available always to us, and it was, I mean, I just enjoyed to spend my time with great minds and great people. And but still I hated Islam. My dad's confidant and very best friend once came to me. I love this man. To me, he was one of the most absolute beautiful human being that I have ever encountered. So he came to me and he said, among all the books that you read, why don't you just try to skim through this book, Masnavi? And I said, it's going to be about Maulavi, it's going to be about Rumi, it's going to be about Islam. I'm not going to read it. No, no way. You cannot make me to read anything about Islam. And he said, just try, you know, just for the sake of me. I mean, you say that you like me, just for the sake of me, just, you know, just skim through. I said, they give all of this garbage in the high school to us. I mean, they say that this so-and-so is such a great person, great poet. I'm not going to. Said, just try. I said, okay. Since I really respected this man, I decided, okay, so I'm going to just try. Sure. So it was, I mean, I'm not exaggerating. It was exactly like that. I said, okay, shoot. Okay, I'm going to read this book. stupid book. So then I said, okay, sure, okay. Masnavi. So it was the first page. بشنو از نی چون شکایت می کند از جدایی ها حکایت می کند که از نیستان چون مرا ببریده اند از نفیرم مرد و زن نالیده اند سینه خواهم شرح شرح از فراق تا بگویم شرح درد اشتیاق هر کسی کدور ماند از اصل خیش باز جوید روزگار وصل خیش هر کسی از ذهن خود شد یار من از درون من نجست اسرار من. It was that. هر کسی از ذهن خود شد یار من از درون من نجست اسرار من. There is lots of translations. I decided to go with the Javed Mojaddidi, that I really respect this man. So it goes like this. Now, listen to this reed flute's deep lament about the heartache being part from mint. Since from the reed bed they uprooted me, my songs expressed each human agony. A breast which separation split in two is what I seek to share this pain with you. when kept from their true origin, all yearn for union on the day they can return. Amongst the crowd alone, I mourn my fate. With good and bad, I've learned to integrate. It was so powerful. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. It was extremely powerful to me. And then I decided, I mean, since they are saying this thing, there has to be something about this man and about this book and about this poetry that I need to learn more. And then, since I wasn't a very avid reader, I started reading and started to going more deep into the Sufism and into Rumi. And here it goes. I learned that Rumi was basically born in a very affluent family, as Penny mentioned. His father, Bahauddin, was the Sultanul Ulama, they said. They were lived in Khwarazm. Khwarazm was the a territory in the Persian Empire. Persian Empire, you could imagine, in the 13th century was huge, huge. So it started from Tajikistan, included Afghanistan, part of Pakistan, India, and went all the way through a part of Turkey. So we are talking about a very huge territory. But where they lived, basically, first of all, Mongol came coming, and it was a very specific dispute between Bahauddin, the father, and the Khwarazm Shah, the Sultan, the Amir of the time. So the father decided, I'm not going to stay here. He arranged a very huge caravan and started to travel. You couldn't see it. The map is just very big, and I apologize. I could have had a better map here. I just got it from the book I have. But this area is Tashkent. They traveled through, this area is Tehran, now Iran, and then they traveled all the way to Mecca. The father did the pilgrimage in Mecca, and then it was in this area, and then they traveled towards the north to go to the Konya. Konya was the capital of the Seljuqi kingdom. But along this way, Rumi was then about 18 years old that he decided to marry a very beautiful young woman in his caravan, and the production basically of the marriage was two sons, Sultan Balad and Alauddin. So, and it was saying that if you ever encounter 40 Rules of Love by Elif Shafak, it says there that it's a fictional encounter over the Rumi and Shams and all these things happen in this area. But there is a saying that Alauddin was the person who mapped and planned Shams' murder. But anyway, on the other hand, Sultan al-Walad was the very special son for Rumi. So they settled into this area called Konya, now is in Turkey, and still they call it, the pronunciation is Konya. And they got theirs. They got their because the father was the great scholar. He taught Islamic law and Islamic literature, and he was the great scholar of the time. As soon as he entered Konya, he was hired by the big school, the main school there, to be as the main teacher. At the age of 85, he died, and the chair, the office, was assumed for the sons, the oldest son. The oldest son was Rumi. He was about 25 years old at the time. So he assumed the office, but at the same time, he resided himself. I mean, and he just discipled and devoted himself to the Sufi of the time, who was Burhanuddin, played a very great role in his life. And it was so and so. He was a great scholar. He became a very great scholar. He became a very great teacher. And just imagine, people all around the region and almost all around the area, the Islamic world, coming over to his lessons and to his classes to learn about Islam, to learn about fiqh, to learn about Islamic law. He was great, great, great. And on the other side, it was this whirling dervish who was, he has such a urge, he had such a, he was famous for being very, very forward and assumed a very great power in terms of influencing people and attracting people, so to speak. And his name was Shams Tabriz. He's from the town that I am from, Tabriz in Iran. So, actually my parents, I'm from Tehran, but my parents and we speak Turkish. So, it was the date was important. The book mentions November 29th, 1244, and in some account they say October 29th, but whatever it was the date was very important. So I don't have a picture about the area or the school, but just imagine, it was a beautiful school and it was dormitory all around. And just imagine a very vibrant environment when they are students, they are teachers, they are, think about courthouse. They are talking, they are speaking, they are arguing, they are negotiating, and it's a very vibrant environment. When this man comes over, he enters this space. Big space. Imagine about 200 students and they are just listening to this great scholar. He enters and goes to the roomie, directly to the roomie, and he says, "What's your name?" He says, "What do you mean? I am Jalal al-Din Molavi." And he says, "I know who you are. What are these?" He says, "These are my books. I mean, these are my knowledge." He says, "Yes, really? This is your knowledge. Very good." So he picks the books. And books, they were very expensive commodities. I mean, it's not like now that you, it was just very rare. They usually had very only one or two copies, and really people didn't have access so much to so much books. So he grabs many of those books and throws into the pool of water who was just close to them. And Rumi gets mad. "What are you doing? These are my knowledge. Are you out of your mind? What is this?" And Shams says, "These are your knowledge? These are your knowledge? I pee to this knowledge." And he gets, "What do you mean?" And imagine, he does all of this in front of all of those 200 people. And you can imagine this urge and this power character that no one could ever move to do anything. And Rumi gets very mad. He picks the books and he says, "Are you mad? This is the only copy I have." And Shams again says, "I really pee to this knowledge, that if you can throw it into the water." And he picks the book, looks at the book. There is no stain. There is no, the book hasn't been touched ever. It is dry. And that was that. So Rumi sends after Shams. Shams comes to his court. It was a big court. It was a very big house. Comes to his court, and they spend about less than 2 years together. And in these 2 years, we do not know what happened. But people, the pupils, the disciples, were extremely angry that this man, this, you know, whirling dervish, has taken away our teacher, the great scholar. What was it? Who is this man? We have to get rid of him. So they make the whole town extremely impossible to live for him. And when this happens, so, and he was a whirling dervish, I mean, he was not supposed to even to stay, I mean, he was just traveling, and he had found of this great man who heard from him all around this Islamic land, so he decided to leave. It was then that when he left, Rumi went mad. He was absolutely mad. Mad in terms of, not mad, crazy, those people who might need my husband who's a psychiatrist, no. Mad in terms of, you know, he was out of this world. He was just so absolutely disturbed, in pain, agony. He was very upset. And it was a record and report of his behavior where he sometimes went out in his pajamas with the lantern looking house to house for shams. And imagine Brzezinski is doing this, or Huntington is doing this with his pajama. My goodness. So and then it was a time after a few probably days, we do not know again how many days, but Sultan Veled came over to his room and he listens and he hears something. And he enters the room and he sees that it's his father who is reciting all of these beautiful lines. Beshna az nechon shikayat mikonad, az judoyi ha shikayat mikonad. And then he gets very, oh my God, something is happening here. And he asks one of the other disciples to come over, and they start writing, and the first book of Masnavi comes into life. And after that, Shams, since Rumi was not eating, he was out of this world, and he was just so upset. So Sultan Veled goes after Shams to try to find Shams. He finds Shams. He brings Shams back from Damascus to Qoniyye. Shams stays there for about another 14 months. But again, there is a report that, and then he leaves forever, no one permanently. And there is a record again that it's all a speculation, but it says that he was murdered by Shams' second son. And so this was Masnavi, and then he did Diwan-e-Kabir. Just imagine, I only have this book, but it's huge, just the very thick book of Masnavi, and very thick book, about 165 lines of poetry. Beautiful, absolutely beautiful. So after I did all of this research, I started thinking, okay, why this man? I mean, everybody, we have so many poets, we have so many poems. Why became such an important figure? And I didn't tell you, in high school, I was just always so frustrated by this idea that I have to read Arabic. I have to read Quran in Arabic. So I was always wishing to at least have some text that can explain God in a very beautiful, profound way in Persian and not in Arabic. Compare Arabic and Persian is like compare French and English. You know, they are so much alike, but still they are two different languages. So anyway, I started, this is why this man is very, very important. First of all, he shook the foundation of Islam. How? He said that in the Islamic teaching, you need to do a few things, including if you are a good Muslim, you have to do pilgrimage. You have to go to Mecca and pay your respects, so to speak, to God. And you have to pray five times a day, and you have to fast. For one thing, Rumi said that you do not need to go to Mecca to find God. It's huge. I mean, Prophet Muhammad said, whoever is, any Muslim has to go to Mecca. Prophet Muhammad said, but this man says, you can find God inside you, in your heart. And Mecca is here. So one important thing. The other important thing is that you need to speak to God directly, okay? So in the Islamic tradition, in Islamic practice, I just explained you this very, very, very quickly. So you pray five times a day, and before you pray, there is a ritual you do. It's like you do ablution, it's wuzu, and then with this ablution, it's like you are entering to the world of God, you know? And you should not break this world with any kind of bad behavior, whatever. You basically clean yourself, and then you go and you talk to God directly. It's God, okay, now I'm talking and you are listening to me, right? It's that. I mean, you're talking and God listening to you. It's like that. So it is this practice. Rumi said that you should do that practice. But you know, in Islamic tradition has been put so much emphasis on this kind of practices. But Rumi said that you can still reach the high capacity of your being without even practicing any of those. You have to only constantly be in conversation with God, which was also very, very crucial. One, the thing he said was, okay, so there is different stages in your life. Basically, you have to work very hard, and you have to fight against those evils in order to reach the best of you can. So the thing is, you reach the best of you can reach. I mean, you perfect yourself. It's not, oh, I want to be Jesus Christ or I want to be Prophet Muhammad. You can be there. I mean, there is no limitation. If you set your goal, you set your mind, you can reach it. But the thing is, each time you need to just be better. Just work on it. And remember, it is a very scary and very difficult path you take, you know, because the path is, and each time you may flip. And it's like mind. I mean, the best example I can think of is smoking. If you're a smoker, each time you try to quit and you go back and you smoke again. But Rumi says the verse that the prayer that we just read, come whoever you are, come. He says baza baza haran ke hasti baza gar khajeb o mulk o but parasti baza. He says that just come back. You know, there is room. Just come back. Just make your effort. What matters is the effort, and what matters is that you just fight and keep fighting. But you need someone to take you along, because it's a very difficult path, and there is a peer, because a person has gone through this stages and has reached the point and can help you with getting there. So these are the very important teaching. But here's the thing. He tells all of this. First of all, he tells in stories. I think it's like Bible, you know. So this is the story, and this is the way that we need to look at the story, and this is the lessons from the story, right? But at least for the Persian-speaking people, he tells the story in such a profound and beautiful way. He looks at the story in such a way that it's, you know, I think that's why it made him Rumi. It's because, just give you one example. I mean, he says one of the poem line, a few of the lines that they were just reading. He says, okay, so there is a seed. He says, okay, what is this seed? What do you see in this seed? In this seed, I see an apple, I see an orange, I see a seed that has never grew up, and talks about this seed forever, and draws kind of connection with seed and God that it's beyond this world. And that's why I think it's very interesting. I think so it was my research to understand, okay, so this is that, and Islam did that, but because I just draw this conclusion, I think my dad is right. I mean, Islam has all this, you know, teachings, whatever it offers, but it's the practice of us has made you know, this kind of idea that, okay, so conservatism or terrorism or whatever ism is has made this so dense, and it's been just through the practice of a very particular people and not the world itself is the really, it's like, you know, I think we had in Crusade when they used Christianity to do anything they wanted. Anyway, And it was a very interesting click in my mind that was, I said, okay, so yes, it is that, and this is Rumi. If I need to do anything, I need to just understand what is it there for me to learn and to perfect myself towards a better understanding of life. Thank you very much.
We do have time for a couple questions.
This is the, here's the thing, translating Rumi is easier than translating other poets, other Persian poets, and you can still understand, you can still enjoy the aesthetic. But here's the thing, the meanings are important. And by, even by translation, you can understand the beauty, the beauty of the idea.
Yeah.
Coleman Barks is very good. Lale just mentioned Coleman Barks. Yes, Coleman Barks. Lale said, I mean, it was Nicholson spent many years, 40 years, to translate Rumi. And Ehsane Yarshater, Columbia University teacher and also scholar asked Coleman Barks in one of the party that please take Rumi out of the Nicholson's prison. So and the Coleman Barks himself is a poet. He did an amazing job, and that's why that stands out because he understands this rhyme and things. But here's the thing: I just translated Rumi. Javed Mojaddedi also is a scholar. He's not a poet, but he has done a very good job of. He just got his book 2 out. Masnavi is 6 books, so I think he's also very good. But if you just want to, you know, enjoy Rumi, Coleman Barks is, in my opinion, is the best. Yeah. But if you want to study Rumi, is Javed is good.
Well, thank you very much, and I think that.
Thank you.
Penny mentioned that if people had other questions or comments, there'd be a little gathering. Is that true, Sayida?
Sure.
For just
yes.
A few minutes after mm-hmm. the service. So, thank you very much. Our closing words will be provided by Paula.
Be like melting snow. Wash yourself of yourself.
Thank you for coming today. Please extend the hand of friendship to those around you and join us for some coffee and conversation.